Chapter 27. Has never plenteously endowed me, sir, as in appearance you. But to plain sense things seem as stated. Spirit will let seemings be. But no, these English take to liquid life right patly nursed therefore in infancy by rhymes, and rains which creep into their blood, till like seeks like. The sea is their dry land, and, as on cobbles you, they wayfare there. Woman, heaven prosper then, their watery wayfarings, if they'll leave us the land. The imperial carriage appears. The emperor. Long live the emperor. He's the best by land. Bonaparte's carriage arrives, without an escort. The street lamps shine in, and reveal the Empress Josephine seated beside him. The plaudits of the people grow boisterous as they hail him victor of Austerlitz. The more active run after the carriage, which turns in from the Rue Saint-Honor to the carousel, and thence vanishes into the court of the Tuileries. Woman, may all success attend his next exploit. Spirit, namely, to put the knife in England's trade, and teach her treaty manners if he can. Woman, I like not your queer knowledge, creepy man. There's weirdness in your air. I'd call you ghost had not the goddess reason laid all such past Mother Church's cunning to restore. Adieu. I'll not be yours tonight. I'd starve first. She withdraws. The crowd wastes away, and the spirit vanishes. Scene V. Putney. Bowling Green House, Pitt's Bedchamber, from the landing without. It is afternoon. At the back of the room as seen through the doorway, is a curtained bed, beside which a woman sits, the Lady Hester Stanhope. Bending over a table at the front of the room, is Sir Walter Farquhar, the physician. Parslow the footman and another servant are near the door. Tomline, the Bishop of Lincoln, enters. Farquhar in a subdued voice, I grieve to call your lordship up again, but symptoms lately have disclosed themselves that mean the knell to the frail life in him. And whatsoever thing of gravity it may be needful to communicate, let them be spoken now. Time may not serve, if they be much delayed. Tomline, stands at this? The name of his disease is Austerlitz. His brow's inscription has been Austerlitz from that dire morning in the month just past, when tongues of rumor twanged the word across from its hid nook on the Moravian plains. Farquhar, and yet he might have borne it, had the weight of governmental shackles been unclasped, even partly, from his limbs last lamastide, when that despairing journey to the king at Gloucester Lodge by Wessex shore was made to beg such. But relief the king refused. Why want you, Fox? What Grenville and his friends? He harped. Who are sufficient without these rather than Fox? Why, give me civil war. And fiber that would rather snap than shrink held out no longer. Now the upshot nears. Lady Hester Stanhope turns her head and comes forward. Lady Hester, I am grateful you are here again, good friend. He's sleeping some light seconds. But once more has asked for tidings of Lord Harrowby, and murmured of his mission to Berlin as Europe's haggard hope, if, sure, it be that any hope remain. Tomline, there's no news yet. These several days, while I have been sitting by him, he has inquired the quarter of the wind, and where that moment beaked the stable cock. When I said, asked, he answered, had as well. Those are the breezes that will speed him home. So cling his heartstrings to his country's cause. Farquhar, I fear that Wellesley's visit here by now strung him to tensest strain. He quite broke down, and has fast faded since. Lady Hester, now he wakes. Please come and speak to him as you would wish, to Tomline. Lady Hester, Tomline, and Farquhar retire behind the bed, where in a short time voices are heard in prayer. Afterwards the bishop goes to a writing table, and Lady Hester comes to the doorway. Steps are heard on the stairs, and Pitt's friend Rose, the president of the Board of Trade, appears on the landing and makes inquiries. Lady Hester whispering, he wills the wardenry of his affairs to his old friend the bishop. but his words bespeak too much anxiety for me, and underrated services so far, that he has doubts, if his high deeds deserve such size of recognition by the state as would award slim pensions to his kin. He had been fain to write down his intents, but the quill dropped from his unmuscled hand. Now his friend Tomline pens what he dictates, and gleans the lippings of his last desires.
Rose and Lady Hester turn. They see the bishop bending over the bed with a sheet of paper on which he has previously been writing. A little later he dips a quill, and holds it within the bed curtain, spreading the paper beneath. A thin white hand emerges from behind the curtain and signs the paper. The bishop beckons forward the two servants, who also sign. Farquhar on one side of the bed, and Tomline on the other, are spoken to by the dying man. The bishop afterwards withdraws from the bed, and comes to the landing where the others are.
Tomline, a list of his directions has been drawn, and feeling somewhat more at mental ease, he asks Sir Walter if he has long to live. Farquhar just answered, in a soothing tone, that hope still frailly breathed recovery. At this my dear friend smiled, and shook his head, as if to say, colon, I can translate your words, but I reproach not friendship's lullabies. Rose, rest he required, and rest was not for him.
Farquhar comes forward as they wait.
Farquhar, his spell of concentration on these things, determined now, that long have wasted him, have left him in a numbing lethargy, from which I fear he may not rouse to strength for speech with earth again. Rose, but hark! He does.
To listen.
Pitt, my country! How I leave my country! Tomline, ah, immense the matter those poor words contain! Rose, still does his soul stay wrestling with that theme, and still it will, even semi-consciously, until the drama's done.
They continue to converse by the doorway in whispers. Pitt sinks slowly into a stupor, from which he never awakens.
Spirit of the pities, to spirit of the years, do you intend to speak to him ere the close? Spirit of the years, nay, I have spoke too often. Time and time, when all earth's light has lain on the nether side, and yapping midnight winds have leapt on the roofs, and raised for him an evil harlequinade of national disasters in long train, that tortured him with harrowing grimace, now I would leave him to pass out in peace, and seek the silence unperturbedly. Spirit sinister, even its official spirit can show ruth at man's fag end, when his destruction's sure. Spirit of the years, it suits us ill to cavil each with each. I might retort. I only say to thee its slaves we are. Its slaves must ever be.
Chorus, aerial music.
Yea, from the void we fetch, like these, and tarry till that please to know us by whose stress we emanate. Our incorporeal sense, our overseeings, our supernal state, our readings why, and whence, are but the flower of man's intelligence. And that but an unreckoned incident of the all-urging will, raptly magnipotent.
A gauze of shadow overdraws.
Part second. Characters, I phantom intelligences, the ancient spirit of the years, chorus of the years. The spirit of the pities, chorus of the pities. Spirits sinister and ironic, choruses of sinister and ironic spirits. The spirit of rumor, chorus of rumors. The shade of the earth. Spirit messengers. Recording angels. 2. Persons.
The names in lower case are mute figures.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.